brothers as they have come down to Egypt looking to purchase food. As we understand, they're in the midst of a great famine. And actually, at this point, they're 2 years into the famine. So they've gone to visit Egypt once. And what was the result of their first trip to Egypt? Did they come back with food?
They got grain.
Okay, they got grain. They got what they came for. What was the cost of that grain, besides money? Okay, they got their money back, but what else happened? Okay, Simeon was had to be left behind, and then what was the condition for Simeon to be returned to them? Okay, they had to bring. The governor said you must bring your younger brother. He wanted them to prove that their story, just to find they were not spies, was true. Of course, Joseph knew who they were and just wanted to see Benjamin. So they were told to bring the youngest brother, or they would not see his face again. So we talked Sunday about their second trip down to Egypt. Once again, to purchase grain. They're out of food at this time. Jacob tells them that you need to go back so that we don't die. And they take back the money that was returned to them. And they try to repay it back. They talk to Joseph's steward. What does the steward say when they try to repay it? He doesn't say that he put it back. He says he received their money, but who put the money back in their sacks? He says, your God put the money back. We got your money when you paid for it. So, of course, the steward would have known that that wasn't the case, but just trying to make up a story for why they got their money back in the sacks and that they weren't going to be accused of being thieves. And then we understand that they dine with Joseph in his house. What are some of the interesting aspects that we read about in this feast? How were they seated? Okay, they were seated in order of their age. Okay, and they're seated differently than Joseph. And who else was separate from the brothers? Okay, so the other Egyptians that were present during the feast sat separately from Joseph and from the brothers. And why was that? Okay. Yep. We read in Genesis that it says that they were an abomination to the Egyptians, so they were set separately. What about the portions that they're served? Where are they served from? Okay, they're served from Joseph's table, and do they all get the same amount to eat? Okay, Benjamin got five times the amount of food, so he must have been a growing boy, although he's in his 30s at this point. Okay, so we conclude chapter 43, the end of the feast. So the brothers are returning home, and what's put back in their sacks this time before they head back? Okay, the money and a silver cup. And Joseph tells his steward to go out and stop them. And what's so special that the steward's going to say, at least, about this silver cup? Okay? It's the cup that he says is the cup that his master drinks from and practices divination. And I mentioned on Sunday that that's the practice of conjuring up a spirit or a demon to tell you things about the future. And remember that Lot practiced divination as well, that we read about previously in the book. So very serious accusation here. You've stolen this very special article that our master uses. And do they end up finding the cup?
Yes.
Okay, they find the cup. Well, I should have asked this question first. Before the cup is searched for, the brothers say, of course, they don't think they have it because they didn't take it. And what are the conditions that that the brothers say, if it's found, what's going to happen? Okay, the one who took it is going to die. And whose sack is it found in? Okay, so it's found in Benjamin's sack, the brother that is the most precious to Jacob, the brother that Judah is the security for, essentially, that he guaranteed his safety. And that's where we'll pick up in our reading this evening. Look at chapter 44 and verse 14. So this is after the cup has been found in Benjamin's sack. The brothers tear their clothes because they're very upset that what's been found. So verse 14, when Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" And Judah said, "What shall we say to my lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my lord's servants, both we and he also in whose hand the cup has been found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father." So we actually read this passage on Sunday. So Judah mentions here in verse 16, he talks about their guilt. And, of course, what's the only thing they're guilty of, really, as far as Joseph's concerned? It's not taking the money, is it? Because they didn't take money. They didn't take the cup. Okay, so yes, it's the mistreatment of Joseph, throwing him in that pit, ultimately selling him into slavery, which results has resulted in where they're all at today. So Joseph says in verse 15, "Do you not know that a man like me can practice divination?" So kind of scaring, trying to scare him here. That again, just saying that this is a serious charge. And Judah offers in verse 16, he offers that, you know, we'll all be your servants because of what's happened. But Joseph says, nope, only the guilty one's going to be punished. Of course, that is going to be Benjamin. So verse 18, then Judah went up to him and said, "Oh, my lord, please let your servant speak a word in my lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My lord asked his servant, saying, 'Have you a father or a brother?' And we said to my lord, 'We have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children. And his father loves him.'" Now, just a side note here, and we'll pick up in just a second. So Judah's saying here, he's kind of affirming now that the other brother is dead. Before he said, well, he is no more, which you could have, if you're listening to that, and you're having that conversation with the brothers, you would assume that that means he's dead or something happened to him. But here, Judah say, nope, he's dead. Verse 21, "Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him.' We said to my lord, 'The boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die.' Then you said to your servants, 'Unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again.' When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my lord. And when our father said, 'Go again, buy us a little food,' we said, 'We cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us.' Then your servant, my father, said to us, 'You know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. If you take this one also from me, and harm happens to him, you will bring down my gray hairs and evil to Sheol. Now therefore, as soon as I come to your servant my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die, and your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father.'" So lengthy reading here, but that was kind of all one segment. And it's just Judah recounting, reminding Joseph, because, you know, as far as they know, he sees a lot of people and talks to a lot of people. So they're reminding him, you know, this is what happened the first time we came to see you, and why we had to bring Benjamin. We had to bring our youngest brother. And he tells him verses 25 through 31, Judah is telling Joseph of the conditions with their father and keeps saying, "You're serving our father," to bring the youngest brother as Joseph had told them to do. And then the last part of that section of verses 32 through 34, Judah here is pleading for Benjamin's freedom, and he offers himself to be put in Benjamin's place. So he's willing to become a servant if Benjamin can go free and take his place. So kind of takeaways from chapter 44. Bruce, I think, brought this up on Sunday about the brother's character developing over chapters 42, 43, and 44. And really, as we read this, up to that point, we've been reading about Joseph and the high points of his life and the low points and how he continues to trust in God. He continues to do the right thing in the case when he's faced with temptation with Potiphar's wife, and just seems to always kind of do his best in his job and trust in God, and God works his plan through Joseph. But when we go to chapter 42 through 44, we really read mostly about the brothers, and we see some maturity since the time when they put Joseph into that pit and sold him as out of their jealousy for Jacob's favoritism. And then that kind of culminates here at the end of chapter 44 with Judah being willing to essentially sacrifice himself for Benjamin and become a slave in Joseph's house, if only Benjamin, the youngest brother, the favorite brother, or the favorite son of Jacob. So almost a complete 180 from when they had put Joseph into a pit and sold him. They've done a 180 here, and now they're, at least Judah in this case, is willing to switch places with someone in a less favorable position than he's in. So not only because maybe it's because he loves Benjamin, but also because the love they have, or the love Judah has for Jacob, and understands that this would probably just cause Jacob to die if he was faced with this kind of sorrow again. And also in chapter 44, we finally read of at least Judah, who seems to be speaking on behalf of all the brothers, admitting to their guilt. Now, they don't come out and say that God knows our guilt for putting our brother Joseph in a pit and selling him into slavery. But as far as we know, up to this point, that's the only thing they're really guilty of as far as interacting with Joseph, is having sold off their brother into slavery. And it seems to be that their mindset is that we're being paid back. God's paying us back because he knows what we did. So we're going to move on to chapter 45, and we'll finish up this part of the story of Joseph and his brothers. And in verse 45, I've got here that Joseph is reunited with his family. Now, he's already met his brothers, but his brothers don't yet know who he is. And he hasn't seen Jacob yet at this point. So verses 1 through 3 in chapter 45. Then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, so that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So before Joseph is going to reveal himself to his brothers, he has everyone leave. It says everyone leaves his presence. So this is everyone but the brothers here. So if he'd had other servants or other court officials that were there at this time, he has all of them leave before, because he's preparing to reveal himself to his brothers. And also, he's about to break down and cry. Obviously, if you're in a high up position as he is, that's not something you want people working for you seeing you do, break down and cry. And also so they can kind of have a private family moment as he's about to reveal himself. It's probably what the reasons that he asked them all to leave. And verse 2, it says that he wept so loudly that those outside heard it, and they reported it to Pharaoh. Now, it says that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. So that either means he wept so loud that Pharaoh could hear it from where he was at, or what it probably means is that the Egyptians outside that Joseph's asked to leave have heard it. And, you know, they're dismayed. They're troubled by hearing this, the governor of Egypt weeping. So they're going to go tell Pharaoh as they're concerned. And in verse 3, he says, he reveals himself and he says, "I am Joseph." So we know that Joseph at this point, he's asked everyone to leave. So when he's speaking here, he's going to be speaking in Hebrew so the brothers can understand him. Another thing interesting about this is that he says, "I am Joseph." Now, the brothers have not used the name Joseph when they've been explaining to them what's happened to this brother that is no more or the brother that is dead. So he's using a name that only they would be familiar with. And it says at the end of verse 3 that his brothers couldn't answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So put yourself in the brother's shoes. Now they kind of know this governor has been playing these games with us. Now they kind of start to understand why this is, why they've had to jump through all these hoops. That the brother they sold off into slavery all those years ago and had left for dead is now the second most powerful man in Egypt and really the known world at that time, because they're the only ones that have food. And they're standing before him at his mercy. What's he going to do to them is probably what they're thinking. And again, he kind of proves himself. He's speaking in Hebrew so they can understand. And he's using the name Joseph that they knew exactly who he was talking about. But in verses 4 through 8, it says, "So Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come near to me, please.' And they came near, and he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt.'" So again, it doesn't seem like they responded to him the first time that he says who he is. So he's telling them again, "I am your brother, Joseph, and not only am I saying the name Joseph, but I'm the one you sold into slavery." So again, he's proving who he is to them. Verse 5, "And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt." So verse 5, Joseph says, "You know, there's no reason for you all to be upset or be afraid or be angry." Because he understands that although it was the brother's decision to sell him into slavery, that God has used this for his own purpose in order to keep the family of Jacob, to keep the promise that he had made to Jacob and made to Isaac and made to Abraham, to make them a great nation, that God has used this opportunity to save them all and to bring them all together into Egypt. And it also seems, and as we read, this will become more clear, that Joseph understands that what God wants at this point is for the family of Jacob to move to Egypt. Abraham was told that his family was going to go somewhere for 4 generations and they were going to become a great nation. So Joseph understands the plan. So we see here in verse 6, they're 2 years into the famine at this point. And again, Joseph saying that God has planned for Jacob's family to survive, and that's why Joseph has been put in this position. And verse 8, Joseph says that he is as a father to Pharaoh, which means he's a very close advisor and advises Pharaoh as a father would advise a son. One more point that I didn't make, going back to verse 3, is the first thing that Joseph asks is what? Once he reveals himself, he says, "I am Joseph. Is my father yet alive?" So that is what he's worried about. The first thing he wants to know once he reveals himself. I didn't make that point. But so Joseph is still very concerned about his family. He wants to know if his father is still alive.
And I just wanted, as I was reading it, because I've studied it many times, you know, they told him that their father their father is still very much alive. It seems like that's overwhelming to him more so than, you know, seeing his brothers in such a state of shock.
Right.
One other quick little side note I wanted to make. Judah was the one who came up with the idea of selling Joseph instead of him killing him, like some of the others had suggested. That was in 37 verse 26. So it is interesting to see how Judah has matured to the point that he now realizes, you know, that he was willing to stand as the surrogate for Benjamin and take his place. That he understood the importance of, you know, okay, Dad has his favorite son, who was once Joseph, and then look what we did to Joseph. Now it's Benjamin. Look what's about to happen to Benjamin. So I think it's important to comment on his level of maturity.
Yeah, great point. It's, we definitely see a kind of character arc with Judah and how his and how he changes over a period of time. That's a great point. Thank you, Rose. Any other comments on verses 4 through 8 before we move on? Yes. We don't know for sure, but we know that the dreams led to their jealousy, which led to them putting Joseph in the pit. So now they're standing before the brother that they kind of threw away, and the dreams are really what started it. So really, maybe that is coming to mind at this point when they're kind of scared and afraid for what's going
to
happen. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe the guilt, you know, bothered them all after what they did to Joseph. You know, maybe that's something that caused them to maybe rethink the way they treated Benjamin. And you know, we don't know, but you know, these are human men and would have the same kind of emotions and motivations that we would have. So that's certainly possible. Verses 9 through 13. It says, "Hurry and go up to my father and say to him," this is Joseph speaking, "Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. And now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you." Now this is Joseph talking to his brothers here, saying that now that I've told you all these things, and you've seen my face, and you've gotten close to me, you know that I'm Joseph. I am who I say I am. Verse 13, "You must tell my father all of my honor in Egypt, and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." So Joseph's giving the brothers instructions that they need to return to the land of Canaan, go back to Jacob, and tell him about Joseph's position, and then tell him that Joseph is a ruler over all Egypt, and that he needs to come to Egypt, the entire family, all the flocks, all that you have, bring everything to Egypt. In verse 11, Joseph says he would provide for them. And he says in verse 12, again, he's just saying that, I am who I say I am. Now, he also says here, don't have it as a bullet point, but he says in verse 11 that there's yet 5 years of famine left to go. Now, unless I've overlooked it, I don't think they know that, because Joseph knows that because of he was able to interpret the dreams, because God granted him that. So the Egyptians were aware, and that's why they stored up all this food. or at least the higher-ups, Joseph and Pharaoh, were aware of that. But it doesn't seem like the rest of the areas around did that, because they're all having to come to Egypt for food. So they don't know how long this is going to last. So that's an important thing for Joseph to tell them. This is why you need to come to Egypt, because for another 5 years, you're not going to be growing anything. There's not going to be any food, so this is going to be the only place where you're going to find food, and I'll take care of you. Verse 13 just tells the brothers they need to hurry up and tell Jacob and bring him down to Egypt. All right, verses 14 and 15, the brothers are saying their goodbyes, and kind of, it seems like the anxiety kind of is worn off at this point in verse 14. It says, "Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him." So, and they're all weeping here. So, probably maybe weeping for different reasons. One is that they may have been afraid of what Joseph was going to do to them. And now it seems like Joseph's forgiven them and they're going to be free to go. So just, a wave of relief I'm sure they would have had. But on another note, the position that the brothers are in, they have had this guilt that we read about in chapter 44. They've had this guilt that they've been living with for 22 years of what they did to Joseph. And they've grown older. Seems like they've matured. And they understand what they did was wrong. And even after they understand what they did was wrong, and back in chapter 44, it's still, their brother's gone. Nothing they could do to bring it back. They did what they did. And it seemed like at that point they were going to be punished. But now here in chapter 45, they learn that their brother is alive after all. So even though they did this despicable thing about selling him into slavery, which was basically a death sentence, they find out that their brother's still alive. So they would probably be happy about that. All right, and verses 16 through 20. "When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, 'Joseph's brothers have come,' it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go back to the land of Canaan. And take your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat of the fat of the land. And you, Joseph, are commanded to say, do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours.'" So Pharaoh hears the news about Joseph's brothers have come. So remember, Joseph sends everybody out from his presence. It's there. They hear him crying. They go and tell Pharaoh about what's going on. So probably listening outside, probably hear that Joseph's conversation. Or it could be just that they didn't overhear it and that Joseph tells them later on. But no matter how Pharaoh gets the news, he learns that Joseph's brothers have come. And Pharaoh's happy about this. And he tells Joseph to send them on their way and to bring all the family up to Egypt, and they can have the best of the land of Egypt. They're going to eat the fat of the land. And Pharaoh's going to offer them wagons so that the wives and the children can ride in. It's a long journey, so rather than having to walk, because many of them probably would have been walking because not everybody's going to ride the type of riding livestock they would have had, that they're going to have wagons, so they can kind of ride in comfort, which is really nice of Pharaoh to offer that. And they should have no concern for their goods. They would be given the best of Egypt. So Pharaoh says, don't even worry about bringing possessions. You're going to get everything you need here. Just come down and you're going to be taken care of.
That's a tremendous promise that Pharaoh's making to offer them the fat of the land, considering what's going to be happening for the next 5 years.
Sure. Yeah, and we'll see as we read on, the people of the surrounding areas they run out of money to buy food. They start selling themselves into slavery. Yet Joseph's family is, as far as we know, they're living well in Egypt, as well as anybody can during a famine. Mm-hmm. And then one point to add on to what you said is that as far as Pharaoh understands that God is with him, he puts Joseph in charge, and this guy that's 30 years old, only thing he's ever done is look after a prison and look after a rich guy's house. That's really all he's ever done. But he becomes the governor of Egypt and manages this, you know, the years of plenty, and is managing the famine and collecting the money, and everything seems to be going well. So it's certainly evidence that God is with him again, and Pharaoh probably sees that, to your point. Yeah, go ahead, Kenny. And especially from a Hebrew who was an abomination.
Yeah. They're an abomination because they're shepherds and all like that. They'd be more than a different honey.
Good points. We're gonna speed through the rest of this chapter so we can just finish up and stay on pace. So verses 21 through 24, the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. Because they've got to go back to Canaan, and they've got to come back again so they can move to Egypt permanently. To each of them, to each and all of them, he gave a change of clothes. But to Benjamin, he gave 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothes. So again, showing that they have a special relationship as being full brothers. Verse 23, to his father, he sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and provision for his father on the journey. Then he sent his brothers on the way, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the way. So that's just a summary of what we talked about. But I like that kind of parting words of wisdom on the way. Now, mate, you guys don't fight on your way down there. Like, and he's not the oldest brother. He's one of the youngest, and he's giving them, these older men, telling them how they need to behave.
Yep. So you can well imagine that conversation.
Yep. So verses 25 through 28 to close out the chapter. So they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, Joseph is still alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. So the son who they told him, essentially gave him the idea, here's his coat covered in blood. Give Jacob the impression that he was eaten by a wild animal. The story's been something bad happened to Joseph for 20 plus years. And here they come back from the land of Canaan and they tell Jacob that Joseph's still alive. And by the way, he's the ruler of Egypt. So Joseph, of course, is probably not going to believe that. It seems a little far-fetched. Verse 27, but when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So they tell Jacob a little bit more of the details, tell him the things that they were told to say. They say, well, here's the wagons he gave us. Here's the good things of Egypt that he gave us. So Jacob says, all right, that's enough. I believe you. So I'm going to get to see Joseph before I die. And that's where we'll end, and we'll pick up in chapter 46 on Sunday. So thank you for your comments.